Welcome back. Our panel are still with us. I just want to read a few of the comments and texts we're getting in. There should be no tax cuts of any kind. We're still running a 3% deficit and a huge pile of debt. That's from Paul in Mayo. The budget must reward those people who are working and carrying the hardest share of the financial burden in recent years. Welfare should be about giving those who don't work a basic standard of living, but they should not expect the same standard of living as those who do work. That's from Colm. Moving the higher threshold will not help 65% of workers or 82% of all people who earn below €32,800 a year. So please stop saying low income when talking about the top third of incomes. And finally, I'm fed up listening to "we kept the core payments on welfare." How in God's name did they expect us to pay all the new charges and reduce the core payments as well? That's called burning the candle at both ends, and we all know what happens there. And that's from Veronica in Dublin. Roisin Shorthall, over the last few days, we've seen how members of Reform Alliance, Lucinda Creighton and her colleagues, have sought to become members of the technical group. You have been on the independent benches along with your friend Tommy Broon. Are you minded to join the technical group at this stage?
Well, the advice up to very recently was that people had been who had been elected as party representatives and subsequently became independents could not join the technical group. So that advice has changed in the last week. And I suppose those of us that are in that situation are considering our position now. I think there's a number of interesting issues that arise from this. If people in the Reform Alliance and indeed Tommy Broon and myself were to join the technical group, it would make the technical group the biggest opposition grouping in the Dáil, bigger than Fianna Fáil or obviously Sinn Féin. And that raises all kinds of possibilities in terms of speaking times and that.
I want to come to both Darragh O'Brien and Pat O'Toole on this very quickly. Yeah. Would Fianna Fáil have a difficulty if the technical group sought precedence over your party in terms of speaking time for leaders' questions and other matters in the House?
Well, I think firstly, it's the way the business is done in the House is wrong. Okay, and I mentioned this by way of reform. You know, the fact that the technical group exists, it exists to give people speaking time, to give time to introduce their bills. Everyone elected to the Dáil has a mandate. And the way in which business is done in the Dáil, we were told it was going to be reformed, has not been reformed. Government, i.e. the Cabinet, still control what happens in the Dáil and in the Shannon. And, you know, we've had very detailed proposals on reform insofar as that you would have a more congressional approach to that, that you would have the...
We'd have to see, but look, we're
the largest opposition party. So, initially...
You might not be if they had the numbers.
But they're not a party, sorry. The reason they're a grouping, though,
I think we've been cursed in this country by too much homogeneous thought, too much herd mentality, and I think the more voices that we have in Leinster House, the better it is. It's unbelievable that you would have a TD elected and that they would be stopped from putting in their parliamentary questions or their private members' time, etc. With regards to whether or not this group should have precedence in leaders' questions, etc., there's a number of political parties within the technical group, so it would turn the whole process on its head if you were to give that precedence over the larger political parties.
Pat, I just want to move on now to deal with the issue of Scotland, and we're joined by Mark Hennessy of the Irish Times, the London editor of the Irish Times, and also by Professor John Curtis of Strathclyde University. Mark, what's the feeling in Scotland today after the referendum?
Pretty exhausted, I think, all round, and maybe with a sense of relief on the part of all of those who voted for the union to continue, and despondency amongst those who didn't. And at the very margins, there are obviously some people who are extremely angry, and we saw some of that last night in George's Square, but just to emphasise, it's a tiny number of people. But the ill will that has been created here will take some time to dissipate, and there is obviously now a focus on the extra powers that London and all of the various parties down there promised for Scotland, and they will have to honour those promises. And already they are running into some fairly predictable difficulties in actually putting that package together, but they've little choice but to honour the promises that have been made. Scotland has a history with this. Back in 79, they were promised all forms of devolution if they rejected a Scottish Assembly at the time, and it didn't happen, and that created an air of grievance that lasted for years. If the promises are not kept on this particular occasion, there will be a far more serious response from Scottish society next year when it comes to the British general elections and thereafter, that people are not going to go quietly. Even people who voted for the union to continue also voted for more powers, so they will have to honour that.
Professor John Curtis, earlier today Gordon Brown was saying that those promise makers cannot become promise breakers in the time ahead. Is that the key issue now in terms of where Scotland goes?
I think that's true. Certainly one of the consequences of the referendum campaign is that so far as public opinion in Scotland is concerned, the constitutional status quo is off the agenda. Less than one in five people in Scotland now support the current constitutional status quo. The difficulty that's arisen, however, is that the two largest political parties in the UK, Conservative and Labour, have rather different answers as to what should happen to procedures and power and at Westminster in the wake of the fulfilment of those promises. And herein lies the difficulty. Mr. Cameron, quite aware that a number of his backbenchers were none too happy about him signing up to an agreement to more devolution on a speedy process and including not changing in any way the level of public funding that Scotland currently gets, decided to offer them the bone that we would get, they would have English votes on English laws, a long-standing Tory proposal, but one that it's unsurprisingly the Labour Party is not going to sign up to, because the 40 or so Scottish MPs that it has at the moment and hopes still to have after the May 2015 general election could well be crucial to Labour's ability to wield power after the next UK general election. So one can understand why Mr. Cameron did it, but one can immediately also see how the unity that was there a few days ago when faced with the prospect of them all going down together and losing the referendum, that has now very rapidly dissipated as party interest has re-emerged. Meanwhile, the Labour Party, of course, has to come up with alternatives. So it says, well, we'll have a long process of consultation. And by the way, shouldn't we reform the House of Lords and created a chamber that elected chamber representing the nations and regions of the UK? Well, you may remember a couple of years ago, many a Tory backbencher, indeed many of the kinds of Tory backbenchers who are concerned about English votes or English laws, scuppered the Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg's plans for such an elected Lords at that time. So inevitably, the Conservative Party doesn't like that. So ironically, therefore, what's happened is that the battle of interest about constitutional reform at Westminster has re-emerged in the wake of the promise that was made for more devolution for Scotland.
John, I just want to bring Mark back in. Mark, is it really a case, just following from what John was saying there, that the no, for the no side, they won the battle, but for the yes side, the war still continues?
Yes, indeed. There is no doubt about that. And you've already seen signs where the SNP is portraying itself now as the party to get the best devolution deal for Scotland in the talks to come, and that they will seek to dominate that. The problem Labour has, and in terms of the future, is that it is a dual battle to fight, in that it has to look after its interests at a British level and make sure that it has Scottish MPs that do make up the numbers. But equally, it has to be seen in a Scottish context as a party that's delivering results for people there. And if you look at what happened in Glasgow, they are losing traditional areas. Glasgow voted by majority for the union. Now, not everybody there, or for independence, I should say, not everybody there is an SNP voter, but there are people who voted yes on this particular occasion who were previously strongly Labour, who could be perhaps persuaded to desert Labour when it comes to the May 2015 election. So, you know, we are going to see a new SNP leader in November, presumably Nicola Sturgeon, on foot of Alex Salmond's decision to step down. They are a party that has managed to keep the momentum, despite the fact that they led a campaign that lost the referendum.
Just very, very quickly, Pat O'Toole, Martin McGuinness has been one of the people calling for a border poll, but would the way in which the campaign was fought in Scotland and the outcome perhaps give some element of caution?
No, I think at the end of the day, people were inspired right through Europe with regards to the positivity on the campaign in Scotland. It was a grassroots campaign. It was very exciting. And it shows one of the major points that they made was, you know, we can look after our own affairs. And I think that's a message that can be transferred to Ireland, north and south, that we can actually look after our own affairs here. This shows down that the union is not locked down, that there's major change happening. And we want to see at this juncture maximum powers transferred from London to Ireland, and to make sure that we have control over taxation, welfare, and the issues that matter for our citizens, north and south.
Very, very quickly, yeah, just say, but very quickly.
How the SNP approach and how Scotland approached the independence referendum is completely different to how Sinn Féin and the IRA actually approach it. So Martin McGuinness calling for a border poll.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, Darragh.
But just interrupt there.
No, I'm actually, sorry, but it's an important point.
Darragh, would you go to the
well,
come to the end?
I'm sorry. Just a pity.
I'm sorry, we've come to the end.
Any further.
I just want to thank Mark, and I want to thank John on the Scottish issue, and thanks to the rest of our panel. Thank you for listening to us. I hope you can join us again next Saturday at 1 o'clock. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your weekend.